From deep in the Swedish forest, the only individualist radio program in Europe, this is VSI Radio International. People who send me mail written in blood say the nicest things. I get mail, therefore I am. This is the voice of the sovereign individual. My name is Paul Lambert. Yes, well, now we're halfway through this season of VSI Radio International, and I thought it was about time that I catch up on a little correspondence. So we're going to have a bit of a mailbag feature and a few extra tunes this weekend as compared to the usual monologue and what we normally have for you here on VSI. I've got plenty of great feedback already this summer. I'll say already that there's been much less feedback this year, now that I've been on Saturday nights, than I had last year, being on Wednesday nights, but we'll see how it goes. There's been some consideration of continuing VSI all year round, but we'll have to see how popular this time slot is before I make that kind of decision. However, the feedback I have received has been very interesting. A lot of the old regulars from last year and a few new people have chimed in as well. Thank you very much for all your email. Very first episode this year, dealing with the morality of war, generated quite a lot of feedback that not quite what I expected to get, but that's okay. You certainly can write about anything you want. And certainly it's my own fault in that I went on a bit of a tangent about the Arabs. But I got one new person writing in, Michael in Ohio. That's the name he wanted to give me. Michael in Ohio writes, I really enjoy talk radio of all kinds, both mainstream and alternative, both on AM and shortwave. I really liked listening to your show about war, but I had hoped that you would have continued to talk about the Arabs and go into the history of their conflict with the West. I can't be sure, but I'm guessing that you are sympathetic to Israel, or at least you should be if you really do take as much of an interest in history as you say you do. Will you be doing an exposé at all on the Arab-Israeli conflict on VSI this season? I hope you will. Secondly, why do you think the airwaves are so full of anti-Semites, even WBCQ? There are a lot of presenters who are admittedly very clever, but when it comes to Israel, their IQs suddenly fall to moronic levels. How can so many people who seem so good harbor such vicious ideals? Ideas, he writes. Thank you very much, Michael, for that. Michael, look, I'm going to... this could take a long time to answer. I'll put it shortly. First of all, the quick answer is no. I'm not going to be doing anything about the Arab-Israeli conflict this season. I have already been on other radio shows in other countries, and I've written a lot about the topic. It's not really what I'm going to do here on VSI for a number of reasons. You could make a whole series, a whole program about that, and I really don't want to get bogged down on that. Secondly, you say, why are the airwaves so full of anti-Semites? I don't think so. I don't think that's fair, Michael. There was a time when I might have thought so as well. Yes, you listen to a lot of the airwaves in all over the world, different countries, and you might be talking about the apparent anti-Israel bias. I think it's a bit too simplistic to call them all anti-Semites. The way I look at it is this, Michael, and really I'm addressing this answer just to you, and I think you'll understand. I'm thinking of, you might remember the old television program The Fugitive with David Janssen, Barry Morse, where Dr. Kimball, who is wrongly convicted of his wife's murder and escapes justice in a freak accident, and then Sam Gerard, played by Barry Morse, constantly chases him all around the United States while Dr. Kimball's looking for the one-armed man who actually did commit the crime, all while at the same time trying to evade Sam Gerard, the detective chasing him. Now, when I first looked at the program when I was a very young man, You know, I enjoyed it, but I always thought that Sam Gerard, what an evil, awful man. Doesn't he realize he's harassing and chasing down this poor, innocent man trying to take him to his death? And you had no sympathy at all for him. It was only when I was watching the program much later in life that I understand that the detective or the inspector, I can't remember what his rank was, but Sam Gerard, he was not a bad guy at all. He was acting upon the information he had. In fact, him truly believing that Dr. Kimball was a murderer, it would have been morally irresponsible not to try and chase him down and bring him to justice. It's really telling. I really liked in the very last episode where they caught up with the one-armed man. It was very clear that Dr. Kimball was not the guilty man. That at the end, Sam Gerard just walked up silently and shook Dr. Kimball's hand and walked off. He didn't say he was sorry. And I thought that was very important because, well, surely he was probably very sorry about the whole incident, but he personally didn't owe him an apology. No, he, based on the information he had, he was acting perfectly morally and taking what would have been the morally correct position had the information been the case. The same is true of many of these commentators who have a sympathy with these so-called Palestinians. You see, Michael, you know as well as I do that the news media, the academia, have succeeded in putting forth this idea that there was once this ancient nation of Palestinian people living in peace, and then after World War II, the UN felt guilty and created this state of Israel out of nowhere, and resulting in these Palestinians being chased off their property and who continue to this day to be oppressed or shot off, or there's even talk about genocide and apartheid and all that stuff. Now, you and I know better than that. But a lot of these other commentators, they just don't know. At the risk of being misunderstood, I am glad that these commentators take the side of the so-called Palestinians, because if there really were some kind of genocide or some kind of occupation or oppression, I sure as hell would want their sympathies to be on the side of the oppressed people. So I don't think these commentators... Now, you say on WBCQ, the only real anti-Semites I've ever heard on WBCQ would be Hal Turner, and I suppose something like Herald of Truth, or some of these Christian identity sort of things that are quite overtly anti-Semitic. But on the whole, no. Just some people just don't know. And it's not their fault. They are simply responding and reacting to the news they are given. What most people know about the Arab-Israeli conflict comes from the 30-second soundbites that are on the news every night, and they don't know the history. Now, to be frank, I am a bit irritated that people who already were adults in 1967 don't seem to remember that there certainly were no Jews at all in the so-called West Bank at that time, and that the war cry of the Arabs who attacked Israel at that time wasn't statehood for Palestinians, but rather, in the words of Nasser himself, to finish Hitler's work. So I get a bit annoyed that there's some kind of Orwellian doublethink, that people just have forgotten that time. But in fairness, again, I can't be half as irritated with them as I am with official Israel itself. Israel doesn't make a case for itself. It doesn't stand up for itself. It doesn't stand up to the lie of Palestinian nationalism. Official Israel only talks about its security concerns in the face of the accusation leveled by the Arabs that the Jews stole their land. Israel never comes to expose the lie. They simply talk about security concerns. They talk about two-state solutions. They've even adopted the narrative. They use words like Palestinian, West Bank. Israel itself has taken on the Palestinian narrative. They themselves believe that there was once some ancient Palestinian people who were the victims of Zionism, that some concession must be made for them. Now, as long as the state of Israel is not going to stand up for itself, I can't do that either. I mean, I'm not even Jewish, Michael. I mean, maybe you are, I don't know, but I cannot be expected to be more Zionist than the Israelis are. So to answer your question, Michael, VSI Radio International will not be addressing the Arab-Israeli conflict to any great degree. But thank you, anyway, for writing, and I hope you continue listening to this and other shows, and just give everyone a break. You might hear Some people say nasty things about Israel and that, but they're not crazy anti-Semites. You know, not every disagreement is a case of angels chasing demons. We just don't all see things the same way. Now, I got an interesting, very short email from someone else, a new writer, someone named Bill Ogden, who indicates that he comes from just outside Chattanooga, Tennessee. Bill writes, "Dear VSI, I've been listening to your show off and on ever since last year, but this is the first time I actually took the time to write you an email." Well, thank you, Bill. Feel free to write any time. Bill continues, "I have only one question. Why do you and Ramsey keep promoting each other's shows when you two seem so far apart in your beliefs? At least Ramsey says so." Well, Bill, look, it's like I just said, not every disagreement is a case of angels chasing demons. I've not had the pleasure of meeting Ramsey in person, but certainly we communicate a lot, very regularly over email, and we get on just fine. Remember, this is free speech radio. It's viewpoints, and those of us involved, we understand that our viewpoints are going to differ. No, we're not going to see eye to eye on absolutely everything. Now, yeah, Ramsey and I, we agree wholeheartedly on free speech, but maybe not so much else, which is a point that Ramsey makes fairly often. I don't know. We're definitely not on the same page, but at times I like to think we're in the same book. And I enjoy listening to Ramsey's show, and he enjoys listening to mine. I think that's the reason why we promote each other's shows. It's just a lot of fun. So I hope you'll continue to listen both to VSI and to Ramsey. Listen to what we have to say and make your own decision. And thank you again, Bill, just outside of Chattanooga, for writing in. Speaking of Ramsey, he himself has written to me, like I said. I'll just read to you what he wrote in an email he sent me on the 14th. Yes, I should forward this. What happened, Ramsey very often will record my show off the air and then send me the recording so I get a sense of what it sounds like over the air. I sometimes have quite a hard time hearing and understanding, but those of you who have listened to shortwave radio as long as Ramsey has, have gotten accustomed to it, have had the practice of interpreting it and making sense of it. So he wrote to me, "If you had been out in our little burg of Norway here on the Tippecanoe, where I grew up, you would have learned the technique. Ha! We had to learn to discount some of the noise. You have a great radio voice, and more treble would, in my opinion, help with listening over the air. Now let me be clear, pardon the pun, I hate people to tell me my business. With radio it gets even worse, so please excuse my unproven point of view." Now I know some people get really sensitive about that. Not I. I love getting advice from people who know what they're talking about. And Ramsey, you've done this for much longer than I have, and I trust that your opinion is worth something. And if I disagree, well then I just won't do it. I'm certainly not offended by being given advice. Thank you very much. Ramsey continues, "The signal to noise was pretty good, I thought, but then the training in the late 40s and early 50s of the last century had to help some. We had the anal on the R30A and the antenna trimmer set, so that might have had some unexpected effects also. That R30A is a pretty good receiver." He continued that he loved the last part of a radio program I had, in which we all learned that the Carolin had its start off the coast of Sweden. So thank you very much for that, Ramsey. And with that, I'm going to take a short little break for a little musical interlude. And in the meantime, I'll try and dig up a few more emails that I got here on VSI Radio.
Everybody wants to shine. Who'll come out? people. You live in the same world as I do, but somehow I never noticed you before today. I'm ashamed to say, beautiful people, we share the same back door and it isn't right. We never met before, but then we may never meet again. If I weren't afraid you'd laugh at me, I would rot and take all of your hands in. I'd gather everyone together for a day, and when we gathered our best bottoms out, they'd say, beautiful people, then you'll never be alone, 'cause there'll always be some same button on as you, include him in everything you do. Beautiful people, you ride the same subway as I do every morning. That's gotta tell you something. We got so much in common. I go the same direction that you do. So if you take care of me, maybe I'll take care of you. Beautiful people, you look like friends of mine, and it's about time that someone said it here and now. Sometimes, somehow, I have a meeting, invite everyone you know. I'll pass out buttons for the ones who come to show. Beautiful people, you never have to be alone, 'cause there'll always be someone the same button on as you. Include him in everything you do. He may be sitting right next to you. He may be a beautiful people too. And if you take care of him, well, then maybe he'll take care of you. 'Cause all of the beautiful people do.
By far, the most popular feature so far on VSI Radio International was the two-part documentary series on Radio Nord, which was an offshore radio station broadcasting off the east coast of Sweden in the early 1960s. And some people ask me for more such documentaries. I do enjoy them, but they are a lot of work. And consider also that all the information in that documentary was already compiled by Ingmar Lindqvist, someone else who was very interested and has a whole website considering Radio Nord. Still, it took about three times as long as it does to prepare a normal monologue broadcast. So as much as I like documentaries, they will be the exception rather than the norm. That said, I should remind new listeners that much of the story of Radio Nord was about how the Swedish government continued to enact legislation that made it more and more difficult and downright impossible eventually for offshore radio to broadcast and broadcast onto the Swedish market, and using some downright rude and downright vicious measures in order to put an end to that an operation. Now, Fred in Ottawa, Canada, I'll tell you, Fred is someone he writes regularly. I could do entire series of shows on some of the things he writes about. Whenever I suddenly find a dry spell, don't know what to do about the next episode of VSI. I suddenly get an email from Fred, and all the creative juices start flowing. So thank you again for writing. Fred sent me quite a lot. Back to the Radio Nord. Fred and I talked about it a bit, and certainly he followed along the story. And he and I both shared the view that the Swedish government was absolutely sickening in its thuggish attitude, and said I could have done an entire program about the government's arrogance in general, especially when it comes to radio and TV in Sweden, especially at that time, but still to this day. Now, Fred wrote back to me. He says, I have sort of mixed feelings about this stuff. On the one hand, I support maximum freedom, freedom of speech, etc. On the other hand, Canadian and American TV has become pretty much unwatchable. It's expensive. I just got an offer in the mail to sign up for some cable TV service for only $100 a month. The non-government broadcasters are just as arrogant as the government ones. The proliferation of commercial minutes per hour, putting a crappy logo constantly in the corner of the screen. It disappears during commercials. Can't mess up the precious commercials with that vandalism, just the programming. Leftist newscasts as the norm. Whole core entertainment. White people as targets of ridicule or hate. White trash, funny. I have yet to hear of a single soul described as Asian trash, black trash, Latino trash, etc. Only white people can be trash in the eyes of the mass media. Now, I can identify a lot of what Fred is saying here. Now, first of all, the little logo that's up in the corner of the screen, I'm not so bothered by that so much, and I think it has a bit of like a watermark purpose to it, so that people don't just tape the shows and resell them or something. I'm not sure. But the little number of the channel or little mark in the corner, that doesn't bother me so much. What does bother me is the spam on the screen that's shown in North American television. And what I mean by that is you'll be watching any program at all, and suddenly at the bottom there'll be this big banner show up saying, coming up next, this odd program, or in 2 weeks, this program. And they just seem to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, I understand if there's some sort of emergency, sometimes bad weather or something else, some sort of warning shows up, that's one thing. But just in normal, regular programming, just suddenly you'll be watching something and then you can't even see the bottom quarter of the screen because there's some silly spam advertisement or announcement or some other program showing up. And it just seems to be getting worse and worse all the time. What I also don't like is even during the credits at the end, when there's the ending salvo music playing and the credits going up the screen, there'll be an announcer coming on talking. And sometimes even I've noticed on American TV, well, the screen will sort of angle inward. You only see like half of the screen, you know what I'm talking about. And then the other half will be some other announcer, either from a newsroom or something else. I think that shows profound disrespect to the viewer and to the people putting together the television program. Imagine going to an opera or to a movie theater and then just suddenly someone coming in with a big megaphone saying, well, after the film, make sure you come next week to watch this film or some other announcement like that. It'd be unheard of. So I think that's really disrespectful altogether. So I think Fred, you and I would be in agreement on that in itself. And yeah, I mean, I don't watch television myself, but I certainly have seen enough of it. And when I do encounter it again, I really haven't missed it. For a lot of things you say, yes, it's okay to make fun of white people when other people... I don't take television that seriously. And so I really don't know why people are so uptight about that. I mean, you could argue it could be some sort of propaganda purpose, and it is very left-wing, and it is all that. But I do the one thing I know I can do to avoid that, and I just don't watch television at all. But Fred, beyond that, you add on top of that the general low level of TV programs, the vulgarity, etc. It is a diet of pure sugar. Maybe it tastes great, and it's what the kids want to eat. But I have my doubts as to how wholesome this is, and I fear that it has effects on society, some of which I think are already manifest in crime rates, broken homes, stupid voters, declining level of civility in everyday life, coarseness, bullying, etc. Alas, I'd be hard-pressed to prove the connection, just a hunch that there is some connection. Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. It might be like a sort of chicken and the egg thing. I don't know which came first. Does television simply reflect the reality that we're just becoming less civil, generally? Or has the lower level civility come from? All the people watching television thinking that that's normal. There's an argument either way. I don't know the answer either. I'd be hard pressed to prove, but I don't see it as a separate thing, like television versus society. I see it as all part of one common culture, each thing being constituent, and it's altogether just pretty rotten. So, yeah, I can identify with that as well. I'll get back to a little more of Fred's mail here, but let's have a little more music, and we have a few other people as well to hear from, too. So remember, you're listening to VSI Radio International.
La mer qu'on voit danser le long du golfe clair a des reflets d'argent. La mer, des reflets changeants sous la pluie. La mer au ciel d'été confond ses blancs moutons avec les anges si purs. La mer, bergère d'azur infinie. Voyez, près des étangs, ces grands roseaux mouillés. Voyez, des oiseaux blancs et ces maisons rouillées. La mer les a bercés le long des golfes clairs et d'une chanson d'amour. La mer a bercé mon cœur pour la vie. La mer qu'on voit danser le long des golfes clairs a des reflets d'argent. La mer des reflets changeants sous la pluie. La mer au ciel d'été confond ses blancs moutons avec les anges si purs. La mer, bergère d'azur infinie. Voyez, près des étangs, ces grands roseaux mouillés. Voyez, ces oiseaux blancs et ces maisons rouillées. La mer les a bercés le long des golfes clairs et d'une chanson d'amour là-bas a bercé mon cœur pour la vie.
You are listening to VSI Radio International. If you'd like to get in touch with the program, please send an email to feedback@vsiradio.org. That's feedback@victorsierraindiaradio.org. VSI Radio International is produced in Sweden, exclusively for broadcast on WBCQ, transmitting from Monticello, Maine, USA on 7,490 kHz. My name is Paul Lambert. Now, I get a lot of questions about Sweden. I didn't really expect to do that so much with this program, but that's fine. It's interesting to see what sort of things my listeners are interested in, the kind of mail they send to me. Getting back to Fred again. I mean, Fred sends me so many different things. It's amazing that a man has so many different interests. But he writes to me, Sweden seems to have proved that high-tax socialism can work. Well, I base that on high GDP per capita numbers. Weird. Then he produces a list of IMF stats from different countries, Sweden being up near the top in terms of GDP. And he wonders if he's missing something, if he wants to know if I can explain it. I can't explain it. Look, I can do this. What I did, quite frankly, was take a look at what GDP actually is. What does it measure? GDP stands for gross domestic product. Now, it turned out to be an incredibly large topic, but if you can check it out, you can check it in Wikipedia or get out the encyclopedia and see what it's about. It actually gets pretty complicated. But I've boiled it down to a few things, thanks to our friend Wikipedia. And gross domestic product is the market value of all officially recognized final goods and services produced within a country in a given period of time. GDP per capita is often considered an indicator of a country's standard of living, but that is highly and very hotly contested. You see, what the problem I have with GDP is simply it takes too many things into consideration. Too many factors are added together. And the expenditure method, one economic formula for determining GDP, is that GDP equals private consumption plus gross investment plus government spending plus exports minus imports. And so that's gross domestic product. It measures production regardless of the various uses to which that production can be put. Production can be used for immediate consumption, for investment in new fixed assets or inventories, or for replacing depreciated fixed assets. Domestic means that GDP measures production that takes place within the country's borders. In the expenditure method equation, the exports minus imports term is necessary in order to null out expenditures on things not produced in the country, that is imports, and add things produced but not sold in the country, that's exports. So you see, you're adding a whole bunch of things together, and I can well believe that Sweden is up the top on GDP, but just how much of an indicator that is of the standard of living and whether socialism can work is something I would question. Now, the Austrian School of Economy has a gentleman named Frank Shostak. Now, remember, the Austrian School of Economy, that's the same school as Ludwig von Mises, what he came from, and it's one I subscribe to in most respects anyway. Now, he thinks that GDP is a rather empty abstraction and has no real link to the real world, and it's really not very valuable in economic analysis. In his words, the GDP framework cannot tell us whether final goods and services that were produced during a particular period of time are a reflection of the real wealth of expansion or a reflection of capital consumption. For instance, if a government embarks on the building of a pyramid, which adds absolutely nothing to the well-being of individuals, the GDP framework will regard this as economic growth. In reality, however, the building of a pyramid will divert real funding from wealth-generating activities, therefore stifling production of wealth. So what are we to make of the periodical pronouncements that the economy, as depicted by real GDP, grew by a particular percentage? All we can say is that this percentage has nothing to do with real economic growth and that it most likely mirrors the pace of monetary pumping. Thus, we can conclude that the GDP framework is an empty abstraction devoid of any link to the real world. Now, you can either accept that or not. What I would say when I've ever encountered the question, oh, does socialism work? Does capitalism work? Well, anything will work. The question is, what is it that you are trying to make work? If you want everybody to be absolutely equal in terms of material wealth, and that everyone will have exactly the same, earn the same, make the same, then, well, no, capitalism doesn't work. Socialism can. Socialism works perfectly well for that. Take a country like North Korea or Cuba. You know, they have equality, all right. Everyone's starving and everyone's a slave. But to that end of making everyone equal, it works very well. I don't have to take it to that extreme, really. Just considering the question whether socialism works, you see, Sweden puts on a good front to the outside world, but within the country itself, the socialists themselves are really upset. Now, they see that Sweden has been spared the worst of the global economic disaster of the past few years, but at the same time, they complain that the The gaps, the disparities in the society are growing. They are opposed to the very widespread privatizations and deregulations that have gone on in this country as well. So if Sweden as a country is working, it's only been within the context of abandoning a lot of socialist ideas. All I can tell you anecdotally is that you still have it much better off in North America than here. And no, it's not that bad. I know I take a strip out of this country a lot. It's not so bad. But poverty is not just measured in dollars and cents. It's an whole experience of life. Sweden is a country in which at 3 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon, it can be impossible to find a light bulb, a toothbrush, a pair of shoelaces, a battery, because all the stores are closed. And that's in part due to tradition, but also to the labor unions and the social legislation that thinks that work as such is exploitive and highly limits the hours people can work without charging great premiums to the employers. Things don't even open early enough in the morning. If you're a businessman on the way to the meeting at 10 in the morning and you need to buy a notebook, there's nowhere to buy it. You can't. Nothing's open until about 11, and everything closes at 5 or 6. And it's only open on Saturday until about noon or 1 o'clock. And so people are rushing around. There's no benefit to citified living in Sweden. You have to plan to buy things. You need to take time off work to go get them. In the same way you'd have to do if you lived in a remote village or on a farm and had to make a weekly or monthly trip to stock up in a big city. If you're the type of person who just likes to get an idea and go and buy something as soon as you need it, you'd have a very hard time here. And so that is part of why what makes it a poor country. What's the point? I could have $1 million in my pocket, but if there's nowhere to spend it, where is the wealth? Where is the, you know, what makes that a rich country? Make no mistake, Sweden is a poor country by such standards. I talk to immigrants who come here from Africa, from Asian countries, Middle East, and they tell me that had the king of Sweden himself invited them to move here, they would have not have done so if they had realized just how boring life is. In their countries, considered poor countries, they have markets and restaurants and bazaars open all day and all night, and there's just so much more life there that it gives me certain pause to think that those people regret coming here. But I think I've exhausted that. I hope I've answered your question, Fred. GDP, on the one hand, only measures a certain thing, and how useful that measurement is a matter of debate. And also just on a day-to-day basis, there's far less to buy, far less to do here than it is in other countries, certainly in your country, in Canada, and certainly in the United States. So once more, let's take a little break for a few songs, and then we'll be back with another old... I better not say it that way. Another regular contributor, Jim Tyner. Let me be the shoes on Tripoli. Let me say. Yes, Jim Tyner is certainly probably my most observant fan, who picks up on absolutely everything that's said, and even the difference in sound quality and propagation and, well, just about everything. Jim Tyner, he writes from upstate New York. As part of his letter he wrote to me, he asked me, he said, says Jim, "I know I asked you once before whether you're able to hear WBCQ from your home. It's too bad that VSIRI isn't heard in Sweden over the ether, as it were. The ghosts of Radio Nord would be pleased, I think. It's just not the same, somehow, listening on the ersatz digital ether of our present age. There's something about the directness of live or even pre-recorded audio reaching my receiver that I like better, even if it's just my imagination. I think that's what I liked about the Radio Nord story. The idea of guys and gals at sea, on a rolling ship, running the controls of a radio station, and even live broadcasting. That seems, well, kind of thrilling. Sure, the audio quality of MP3 is superb, but the whenever I want to, stop and start, back up and skip ahead mode of listening seems to be too self-centered compared to broadcast listening, where you have to be there on time and pay attention." Jim, to answer your question, yes, you have asked me before, I have answered, but I'm happy to answer again. Once ever did I receive WBCQ off the air here at my location. I used a handheld Realistic DX380 with the telescoping antenna. Now, I couldn't hear it from my house down in the valley. I had to climb up to the edge of town, up over the hills, and late at night, I did actually listen quite clearly to Ramsey's Roadhouse. It was a Monday night in January, back when the station was on 7415, just toward the very end of that period. It came in perfectly well. Now, since then, I've not been able to hear very clearly at all, usually not, and especially since it's been on 7490, there's Chinese broadcasts, and I've only once, I shouldn't say that, a few times I've been able to make out that I was listening to Brother Stair, only because he has quite a unique sounding voice that is unmistakable, even though I couldn't really understand anything being said. So, as a general rule, I have to listen on internet for reasons. But I've been trying for a very long time to try to articulate exactly what the feeling is, but I do get a sense that there is just something cozier, perhaps more romantic, about actually listening off the air, even though the sound quality of an MP3 is much better. I don't know what it is. It maybe just feels more like it's keeping you company. Maybe it's the sense of anonymity, because when you have an internet connection, it still is a connection. There is some sort of direct line that, gives away your identity. I don't know. It's hard to articulate, but there is, I agree, there is just something about listening off the air that no matter how good a sound quality you get off internet radio, it just can't replace. Maybe I'll be able to think of a better way to explain how I feel about it in some other time. I've got one more email to read, but before we do that, let's have some more music.
One look from you, I drift.
very, very short email from someone named Philip from Goose Bay, Labrador. It's interesting, Goose Bay, Labrador. Small place in Canada. Philip is the only name he gave. Anyway, Philip asked me, what do you think of the Olaf Palme assassination and what is the conspiracy behind it? All right, Philip, look, oh, goodness. Now, for those who know, Olaf Palme, a longtime politician in Sweden, he was eventually prime minister, and he was murdered on the streets of Stockholm on the 28th of February, 1986. Now, there was a man arrested, tried, and convicted for his murder, this fellow named Christer Peterson, who has since died himself. He was convicted, but he had an appeal, and his conviction was overturned on appeal, but it was really just on technicalities. There's no doubt in my mind that it was this Christer Peterson who murdered Olaf Palme. Now, what makes that sad to many, well, it's of course, it's sad anyway, but what really bothers a lot of people of the left-wing persuasion, the Social Democratic Party, is that this Christer Peterson, he was just a pill-popping boozer. He was a nobody. He claimed that he had confused Olaf Palme for a drug dealer who had ripped him off and that he meant to shoot and kill that drug dealer and didn't realize until it was too late that he had shot the wrong person. Now, I know that doesn't sound too exciting to conspiracy buffs, but I accept that answer. I know it's really uneasy. That's why conspiracies come about, the JFK assassination. It doesn't sit well with us that when our heroes can fall into such unnecessary ways, to just at the hands of such insignificant people. Of course, all sorts of conspiracies abound about the Olaf Palme murder. Aftonbladet insists continually that Israel was behind the murder. But, I mean, of course, that's just a conspiracy theory. And others, there were conspiracy theories involving the police, involving the Kurdish PKK from Turkey, all sorts of weird conspiracies. And I really don't think it'll come to anything. Now, the statute of limitations on murder is 25 years. Now, that has been lifted in Sweden for the Palme case alone. And that is because there are so many people who have made careers on this case. Their very job security depends on this case never being solved. So, you know, just to answer your question again, Philip, yes, I'm satisfied. It was this dummy, waster, drug addict fool, Christer Peterson, who murdered Olaf Palme, shot him in the back on a street in Stockholm in 1986, and that it doesn't go any farther than that.
If I could save time in a bottle, the first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you. If I could make days last forever, if words could make wishes come true, I'd save every day like a treasure, and then again I would spend them with you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. I've looked around enough to know you're the one I want to go through time with. If I had a box just for wishes and dreams that had never come true, the box would be empty except for the memory of how they were answered by you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. I've looked looked around enough to know you're the one I want to go through time.
Remember, if you'd like to get in touch with VSI Radio International, please send an email to feedback@vsiradio.org. That's feedback@victorsierraindiaradio.org. My name is Paul Lambert. Now, I had a lot of high hopes for VSI by this time, including cleaning up what's now a very rudimentary web page. I'm still working on that. I wanted to get a mail drop as well, but I'll tell you quite frankly, I'm still trying to see how well this Saturday night slot works out. If I get the sort of feedback and response that I need to justify it, I'll go ahead with that and still try and see if I can get back on during the weekday. But nevertheless, I'm still having a lot of fun with VSI, and I hope you're still enjoying listening. Thank you once more for joining me on VSI Radio International, and thank you to all those who sent in emails. I encourage you, yes indeed, once again to listen to Ramsey's Roadhouse, Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. And so, until this time next week, this is Paul Lambert, wishing you all the best.
If you've enjoyed this presentation, visit www.justrightmedia.org for more programming that's not right-wing, it's just right.